This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, 18 minutes past nine, and I just want to take a quick look at the KLCI again. As it stands at this point in time, it's down 0.4% to 1,505 points.
Yeah, I can see actually the rest of the region is kind of mixed today. So Australia is up, if I'm not wrong, Japan is up, but the rest of the region is down. Which is kind of strange because US actually did really well last night. So go figure. But meanwhile, at the end of August, you know, if we look at the telco sector, the government has said that it will develop a digital infrastructure plan known as Jalinan Digital Negara, otherwise known as Jendela. Now, this plan is part of the efforts to improve the country's digital communications,
Digital.
This is a very difficult word. Under the 12 Malaysia plan, which will be released early next year. Now, the necessity for this was even made more apparent during the early stages of the movement control order, where for many, there was the necessity to work from home. But the question is, how will telco companies respond to Jendela? And who stands to benefit?
Yeah, so to help us answer that question and more, we've got on the line with us Toh Woo Kim, a senior equity analyst with Alliance DBS Research. Now, Woo Kim, the government has announced a new plan called Jendela that aims to upgrade the country's digital comms infrastructure. But what are its key initiatives?
Hi. Jendela actually is part of the 12 Malaysian plan, which intends to run from 2021 to 2025. So it will be carried out in phases, and phase one will run from about 2022, from now until 2022, and aims to achieve three key objectives. First is the expansion of 4G coverage from about 92% currently to 97% of population coverage. Second objective is to enhance mobile broadband speed, upgrading it to 35 Mbps. From about 25 Mbps currently. And last but not least, I think the government also intends to increase the number of premises with fiber broadband availability. Currently, I think it's about 5 million. Probably they intend to increase to about 7.5 million by 2022. So I think there's also a few other initiatives such as they are intends to shutting down the 3G networks by end 2021. So we believe this should pave the way for initial 5G network deployment to start in 2022.
But the million-dollar question, Woo Kim, who in the telco space stands to benefit from Jendela?
I think based on the initiative that we see that is unveiled by the government, I think we still believe the fixed-line operators will benefit from Jendela as the government focus is actually to improve the fixed network infrastructure in order to bring faster broadband speed to the consumer. So I think in that sense, you see that the mobile operators will need to do more fiberization to their towers in order to support the higher speed. And also, when we looked at some other initiatives, is that there could be grants given to players to roll out fiber broadband to houses, similar to what the government did with high-speed broadband and suburban broadband in the past.
And since we've got you on the line, Woo Kim, looking at the mobile players with the lockdown, there's been a surge in mobile data usage. But why hasn't that translated to better earnings as seen in the recent earnings season?
I think there's several key factors to this. First is actually the big data monetization, because mobile operators has been giving generous amount of data to their subscribers for quite a while. So I think further exacerbating this issue was the free data initiative announced by the government, where I think the telcos are giving 1 gigabyte per day of free data to the consumer. So secondly, I think also because of the MCO, the physical stores was closed. So this also led to lack of subscriber acquisition activities on the ground during the second quarter. And I think probably a smaller impact also is coming from the roaming revenue because international borders are now closed. So there's inbound and outbound roaming revenue was obviously significantly impacted in second quarter as well.
So has this challenging operating environment led to a price war or maybe more competitive offerings? And, you know, at the end of the day, who stands to benefit?
Maybe we do see a bit of competition going on for the prepaid segment recently. If you are aware, I think Maxis and Celcom actually introduced their unlimited data plan for the prepaid market. So this is quite clearly in direct response to U-Mobile, because U-Mobile has always been introduced this unlimited plan for the prepaid for quite some time at quite a very aggressive pricing strategy.
Yeah, so Wu Kim, considering that, what are your top picks in the telco space and what is that based on?
I think I mentioned just now, we still think that the fixed line players will be the prime beneficiary of government initiative to enhance broadband connectivity in the country. So I think our top pick is Time.com because of its strong growth, as well as I think in terms of exposure to data center is also going to be meaningful going onwards with the expansion. Other than that, I think we also like smaller players like OCK, who can benefit from increase in base power station by mobile operators to expand their coverage. And also, we do have 5 calls on DG, mainly for dividend yield, and also Axiata because of their undemanding valuation.
Yeah, thanks, Wu Kim. That was Toh Wu Kim, Senior Equity Analyst with Alliance DBS Research. I pulled up the Time.com share price, and 1180 is where they are right now. 9 analysts cover the stock, 7 are a buy, 2 are hold, and no sells, you know, Xiaoning. If you buy into the consensus, that's a potential 7% upside from here on in. The most bullish of them is DBS's Toh Wu Kim, actually, $14.10.
Clearly here, the bull of all the analysts.
Yeah, but what is interesting about these guys, a little bit like Telekom Malaysia, they've got that data center exposure, obviously, which then gets them to, you know, monetize both on the front-end consumer and the back-end enterprise as well. And that is an interesting complexion for shareholders.
Yeah, it's also in a funny way the most defensive, because you know when you look at the earnings, a lot of it comes from its wholesale segment. So it's benefiting from the surge in data use, and we saw that during the COVID-19 pandemic, especially from the results. They were once telco company where they didn't really see any drop in their earnings. And this is a fun fact: they actually own stakes in the submarine cables which connect, let's say, Asia to the Americas, right? So it regardless of whichever end supplier or user you use for your broadband connectivity, they stand to benefit.
Correct. And they've also got cables going not just to Japan and in North America, but also westwards to the Europeans, to the Europes and Africas of this world. Wu Kim also mentioned OCK Group. And OCK Group, I think, is the smaller, one of the smaller players in transmission towers. Transmission towers obviously meant to send mobile signals to your phone and back to the base stations themselves. This is a company which is reasonably small, just about 441 million ringgit in market value. Not having done well this year, 21% down, trading at 15 times earnings, 46 cents, and I think up slightly this morning by 1.5 cents. Interesting, because this is kind of like the same business that Axiata has within the fold, and they've been trying to sell
E.co.
E.co. They've been considering a flotation for a number of years. That hasn't come to fruition yet, but I think E.co is a lot bigger than OCK.
Yeah, but I think if you look at it just purely on based on valuations, maybe that's why Wu Kim likes this stock. Unfortunately, it doesn't pay any yield. On a price to book value basis, it does look cheap. It's 0.7 times. EV/EBITDA, which is another consideration when you look at names like this, is only 6.9 times. So I think it's a valuation game, which is another reason he also likes Axiata, which unfortunately has disappointed in the last few quarters when it comes to their results. I think there's patchy earnings across the region. So let's say when Malaysia does better, then Bangladesh doesn't do so well. And that's always going to be an issue. I think an issue for them.
And again, just looking at the analyst profile for OCK, 5 analysts cover the stock, 5 are a buy, no holds, no sells. And get this, right? Return potential 37% on a consensus basis for the next 12 months if you buy into that call. And again, I like the fact that Wu Kim comes out and sticks his head out, because basically analysts, they have to have a point of view. They shouldn't sit on the fence. And if you do have a point of view, make it a direct one, right? So he's the most bullish on the street for OCK with a consensus, with a target price over 12 months of 70 cents. And 70 cents is a lot higher than the 46 is currently trading at right now.
Yeah, but if you want a safer telco stock, he is suggesting DG for its dividend yield. In the past, it was why we looked at telco stocks, because there was certainty of cash flow. But, you know, with COVID-19, we did see earnings come under pressure a little bit. But nonetheless, you know, it does fare better. It has a stronger balance sheet.
It does. The market is a little bit more mixed on Digi. I think, what is that? My math isn't so good. 22 analysts cover the stock. 3 buys, 15 holds, 7 sells, and just a 5% return potential for Digi if you buy into the street consensus. Okay, 28 minutes past 9. After this, the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, BBC's Ed Butler, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.